This week's Major Spoilers podcast goes out to Bill Gibson, a big fan of Critical Hit and Major Spoilers Experience. Thanks a lot, Bill. We loved Snow Crash, by the way.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back. And some call him Wade, some call him Hal. To me, he's still that drummer punk from 15 on Nickelodeon. Siler gets the axe while Clark suits up. Robots versus dinosaurs, guaranteeing Rodrigo's interest. Plus, Bendis wraps up his man crush on Luke Cage. Miller wraps up Stormwatch by blowing your mind. And someone somewhere wants to borrow your Yugo. Mickey Mouse gonna have a cow. Dave's on sale again. Kiss, kiss in the rear view. We're so bored. You're to blame. The Major Spoilers podcast. We know the sound of one hand clapping. And we're on the air.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another issue of the Major Spoilers podcast. So glad you could join us for issue 202. Unlike the 404s that a lot of you were hitting last week on the Major Spoilers website. Oh, man. You know, it has been a terrible week. First of all, I got to tell you, last week is the worst, is the busiest week of my entire year.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only is it finals week, I've got about a bazillion meetings that I had to go to for my job responsibilities. Plus, not this year, we didn't have one live graduation we had to do. We had to do two live graduations back to back.
Wow.
We had reports due and a big presentation by all the seniors that had to be done that this year I got to lead because of my new job responsibilities.
Right.
And so I knew that Friday was a day that was literally from 8 in the morning until 11 o'clock at night. There was no breathing room to do anything. So imagine me staying up until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning on Thursday to prep the site with fantastic stories.
Mm-hmm.
We had some great stuff. Matthew had this great piece all ready to go about previews. I had a wonderful opinion piece. There were about two incredibly, I mean, internet cracking top tens.
Right.
Rodrigo had written a piece.
Mm. William Faulkner did that piece for us.
The Major Spoilers Adventures
with
was
art
the funniest.
By Norman Rockwell.
It was the funniest Major Spoilers Adventure I had ever read up to now.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was prepped. Everything was ready to go. I felt happy going into the weekend. I even had the podcast, the Major Spoilers and the Critical Hit podcast ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Went to bed happy, satisfied, little stressed because of everything that was going on with the rest of the real world. So imagine my surprise when I woke up at 6 that morning and I sat down at the email and said, hey, your website's down. And then I started looking at timestamps. Sometime between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. Central Time on Friday, the site decided to go down.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's off to do, especially when we have great, awesome content getting ready to roll out all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it just requires a server reboot. So, you know, I sent that, and that usually takes an hour to happen. Hour passes by, the site comes up for about 2 seconds and then goes back down. Call technical support, they're like, huh, yeah, we're having the same problem. Oh, yeah, really? I mean, come on. You're watching it. You're seeing that I did the power cycle and things aren't working.
Mm-hmm.
Move along with the next step. It took from about 6 a.m. until about 11, 12 o'clock for them to tell me, oh, yeah, we've done all these tests. It looks like your hard drive crashed. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I've got software that can mount that. You know, we can mount it and I can pull all the data off. No. You don't understand, sir. Your hard drive crashed. Needle lock, spindle lock. I mean, literally.
Yeah, like
too many people
physically like broke.
Yes, too many people trying to hit the site Friday morning for that awesome content just caused the hard drive to melt in unto itself. So there's no way that any of that stuff could be recovered. And you can imagine my large groups of people were around me when I was talking to the tech support person at this time. Mm-hmm. So when I said, you have got to be S-ing me. About 100 people turned to look to see what I was
about
to scream and go off on. And I said, well, what about this dump that you're supposedly doing every night? Oh, no, we were dumping that onto that hard drive.
Nice.
And I was like, but I have a secondary hard drive. Well, you never told us you wanted it there. I shouldn't have to tell you that it was supposed to be there.
You know, so wait, they were backing up to the same drive.
Yes, which doesn't make any sense because...
We have two copies of it on that drive.
Yes. And so this was the thing that's most frustrating is that you have to, when you call technical support, you have to ask not only specific questions to get answers to, mm-hmm. but you have to ask the right questions to get answers to.
Right.
Because otherwise, they're just going to say, well, he didn't tell us to put on the second drive. Let's put it on the first drive. So
I made a photocopy of your paycheck and I put it in the envelope when I gave it to the criminal who stole it.
That's exactly what happened. So I had no time to deal with any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Essentially, I was like trying to force things back to the old website when we were on the other server because I still kept it around. Mm-hmm. That was going to take too long. In fact, they started to initiate it, and so people might have been bounced around to a couple of different IP addresses. At 11 o'clock at night, I finally called back to the ISP and said, okay, we're going to walk through the rebuilding of this site. Mm-hmm. And so between 11 o'clock and 3 a.m. on Friday night, we had the content management system rebuilt, and we were in the process of uploading the database, mm-hmm. which was fine, all well and good, you know. Of course, I had to get up at 5 a.m.
Right.
to go do something else, to go deal with graduation. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, there was a family commitment for my little nephew that we had to drive then across to the other side of the state to go deal with. So you can imagine I'm pretty tired about that time.
Oh, yeah.
I've probably over the last, since Thursday, probably had about 7 hours of sleep total trying to get this site back up. The bad thing that listeners are going to be kind of saddened to hear mm-hmm. is that all that awesome, cool stuff that we had on Friday, all the stuff that we had on Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, all the way back till March 10th, mm-hmm. gone.
Vanished.
Because...
Melted.
Part of this dump process that was going on was that I was then supposed to pull that dump down to the local. Mm-hmm. Well, that's 175... What is it? Well, more than 175 meg, plus the gigs of video and all that other stuff that we have up on the site. Mid-March all the way to the end of April, that's when things pick up. So there is nothing there. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have time to do it. So we lost all that content from that time. Yeah. So what we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks is we will slowly start to backfill stuff, starting with the most recent 2 weeks worth of content, and then backing up till then until we have enough stuff back into the system. Mm-hmm. Luckily, when we migrated from the old server to the new server, I have all the images from that. So right. that's okay.
Yeah,
I think the one that most people are going to be frustrated with is the Major Spoilers forums when those get rebuilt because, mm-hmm. again, everything from March 10th on to today is gone.
Right.
So that's going to be a bit of a hassle. But, you know, the way I looked at it when I realized that I had everything from March 10th, 2010, all the way back to the beginning of the website.
Oh, yeah.
My thought was, hey, a month and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Is a lot better than losing 4 years worth of stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's like putting your arm in a bandsaw and coming away with losing half a pinky. It could have been worse.
It really could have been worse. So between then, by the time we got back on Sunday until, really today, we've been tweaking the site and rebuilding sites. And I guess one of the cool things about this is when the things get rebuilt, sometimes you're like, you know what? That really doesn't need to be there. Let's yank this. Or how can we do this better? And so we're starting to move things around. And I think some of you have already seen some of the new image tags that we're putting on some of the stories. Some of the people have already commented about liking that mm-hmm. look.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Hopefully that'll get your attention a little bit easier as to what we're trying to do with certain stories and a lot more. So thank you for bearing with us. I know that a lot of people were, I've got to tell you, I bet I received about 120 emails on Friday.
Nice.
Hey, did you know your website was down? Yes.
Yeah. That's really the worst. I don't think a lot of people realize, like, and you know, I work in TV, so we get that a lot. You know, you go off the air, phones start ringing.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are, you know, you're off the air, yes. You know, you're off the air, yes. You know, and yet, I mean, you kind of do want people because every once in a while.
Yeah, it's great
in one particular area or for some reason, you are off the air or your website's down and they're not seeing it and you want people to tell you. So it's okay, but when you get that 37th call or email, it's like, thank you, stop.
It's even that way. after even on the Twitter, after I said, yes, the website is down. Hey, yeah. Do you know your website's down? It's kind of like when you have a flat tire on the side of the road and someone pulls up and says, hey, you got a flat tire. Yeah. So, but I appreciate everybody who wrote in and contacted us about that.
Well, I discovered the site was down in a very interesting way. I logged on and I bring up my email as I do, and the email has a little message, and the message is from one of our faithful spoilerites. And it basically says, hey, how long do you think it's going to take you to rewrite the 5 years worth of hero histories?
Nice.
To which my response is, Bahamana?
Yeah.
And of course I log in and I see Danica Patrick. Don't get me wrong. Danica Patrick is fine looking young lady, but I don't want to stare at her face and sit there and go, 5 years of hero history. I don't want to go.
Well, and then for anybody who creates content, you know, it's always good to have multiple backups. So even though we have stuff on the site, I myself have every review I've ever written, every major story I've ever written. I write in a Word document to check for spelling and grammar and all that stuff. New stuff, I just write on the site because it's very, I would say it's the least important thing we have on the site.
So if
I had to go back and do 5 years worth of stuff, I could go back and do 5 years worth of my content, not Rodrigo's content, not Matthew's content. So hopefully everybody's been doing that, and they have, so you'll start to see that stuff populated.
So you only back up the stuff that you believe is worth backing.
Exactly. But this does, you know, I tell my students the same thing. They go out and they shoot stuff on video, and I'm like, well, don't reshoot over the video. Don't tape over that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because you never know when you're going to need it. I've got stuff going back to, like, the dawn of DV video that I can still pull stuff off of.
Almost every project that I make, like, at some point when I was shooting this show that I was actually doing with Scroll Brian back when we both worked together.
Yeah.
I went out all over Kansas and shot all kinds of stuff. And to this day, this was like 3 years ago that show ended.
Yeah.
Like, I still go out and find and use that footage.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because it's specifically the kind of footage that all of our shows call for.
Right. So that's the status of the website. Forums will be coming once I'm satisfied that the main website is working. Don't worry about missing podcasts or missing critical hits. Those are all backed up somewhere else. They're all stored off on our Libsyn account.
Mm-hmm.
Those are also stored on another hard drive locally.
Yeah.
And I've had so many hard drives crash over the last couple of years that when someone tells me you've lost all your data, I'm kind of the point where, you know, I'm ready to move on.
So
that's kind of what we're going to do is just continue to move on, press on, generate new great content, and try to find time to get some of that old great content back into the site.
Forward march.
Forward to the edge of
that cliff. I blame Quesada. He broke the internet in half, and we ended up on the wrong half. That's what happened.
All right, everybody, let's take a look at some of the other big news that's going around the internet, although I don't know why there would be any other news besides the Major Spoilers website going down.
Didn't MSNBC and, like, CNBC, the Dow dropped, like, 1,000 points.
You know, it did.
Dude, I had Charlie Rose and Wolf Blitzer at the door. And they can't use the footage because I didn't have any pants, but they were both like, dude, what the hell?
There are three other stories that I thought might be of some significance. Heroes getting canceled, Heroes getting sued, and Superman gets the cape in the Smallville season finale.
Man.
Yeah, so let's spin that wheel of destiny, see where it lands, hopefully not on... not on 500.
The hard drive on the wheel crashed.
Oh, no.
You know, that's kind of how my week has been going. Well, luckily, before it crashed, I was able to retrieve Heroes is canceled. After however many years on NBC, they've decided to dump Heroes and go on with another superhero-themed show called The Cape that we've talked about before. You know, what can I say? I didn't even watch the last season. Didn't even watch, really, the season before. Only had it on TiVo in case I ever really wanted to see it. But then when I saw season 4 roll around, I watched maybe part of the first episode with that weird carnival dude. Mm. And I was like, this is not for me, and just removed it from my TiVo list. So I knew it was in trouble. People knew it was in trouble. I just got
I knew
off
it was
the
in
Titanic
trouble when,
first.
When they added, you know, they're like, a major character is going to kiss a girl. I'm like, that's like desperate. That is said, you know, that's Wednesday afternoon Maury Povich dredging for readers for viewers as far as I'm concerned.
Rodrigo.
And that's about the point where I stopped watching.
Rodrigo, what happened to Heroes to make it go downhill and go away from this whole, the nation was engripped with the save the cheerleader, save the world concept to Really, NBC? Really? You bastards?
I don't know. I don't know if it's that, you know, that dreaded, like, execs got a hold of it kind of thing, or, like...
Right.
It just really seemed that the first season had a direction that it was going.
Right.
And for me, even that first season was slow. Mm-hmm. And then the second season, it just really seemed like they were just adding things for the heck of it.
Yeah, they kill off a character and then decide to bring him back because that's a popular character.
Exactly. Exactly doing, it's like...
doing the exact same things that the comic book companies do that have got the comic book companies in so much trouble.
The first season was successful because they took everything that comic books did, took out the bad parts, and put it on TV. And by everything that comic books did, you know, maybe right down to the Flood. We've talked about that before.
Right. Which is tied into that other story about heroes getting sued. But
right.
Didn't make it this week.
The second season rolled around. They took literally everything that comic books do, including the bad ideas.
Right.
And threw it all in there. And after that second season, people were jaded. And people stopped watching halfway through the second season.
Yeah.
And they never came back.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing a lot of posts on our own forums and in other forums and other stuff saying, hey guys, season 3 is actually kind of good. Come on back. No. And nobody did.
No, nobody did. Unfortunate. Anything else you can point at, Matthew, that was a reason for Heroes' demise? Was it one of those crumbled under the weight of its own success kind of deals?
I think what it was for me, and I don't know if I'm breaking up for you guys as much as you're breaking up for me.
Oh, no. I can hear you fine.
The first season of Heroes, to me, was the first 141 issues of X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Not even 141. It was from Giant Size 94 to X-Men 141. It was all lightning bolt. Here's something new. And the second season of Heroes was X-Men from about 1990 to 1997, where it's like, this worked before, let's give him dreadlocks now.
Yeah.
This worked before, let's do this. What's Kitty Pryde's code name again? I don't know, make her kiss some girl. I think Rodrigo's point about doing everything the comics did, they actually covered so much more turf, partly because of the monthly nature of comics, that they burned through a lot of the good ideas that they had in that first season or the beginning of the first season. And then they started doing what Marvel Comics has done for the last four or five years, saying, here's a story that's never been told. And the reason it's never been told is because it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And by the time they realized they weren't going anywhere, the people watching the show weren't there anymore. So it started really, really, really good. It was a very strong open, but they didn't know where to go after that open.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's too bad that they couldn't make it strong, because if there was one thing that could have kept and ensured that the comic book superhero story could be played out and maybe even attract new people, it would have been on television. We've got movies, but I mean, even then, some people are saying, hey, we've kind of reached the end of audiences' interest in superhero movies. So the next couple of years will be interesting in that angle. Television, I don't know about the Cape. ABC's got a new... Essentially, it's the Incredibles meet the Fantastic Four, which is the exact same thing.
So the Incredibles.
That's the Fantastic meet the Four meets the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, so that ABC's got that going for them. I don't know.
Which is nice.
Then we've got, of course, those assorted independent television shows that are going on. But
I hear there's a Scott Pilgrim movie coming.
Yeah, I don't know. So, oh well, Heroes, hopefully other people can learn from your mistakes and...
Hey,
we have, move on.
You know, Dr. Peter Coogan was leery about the Cape, so I don't know, man. I'm concerned.
It sounds a lot like, after I'm starting to read it now, it sounds a lot like Beauty and the Beast. Mantis.
By the way,
Mantis wasn't too bad.
Mantis is on Hulu now. You can go and you can watch episodes of Mantis on Hulu.
When Mantis was on...
Go watch Viper. It's a good show.
When Mantis was originally on, I was living in a little cruddy apartment down on 2nd Street, and I had a little black and white TV, and the only time I could watch it was the 30 minutes before I had to go do a midnight to 6 a.m. radio shift. And so I'd only catch like 30 minutes of the show, and I was like, this isn't half bad, so maybe I'll have to go and watch it on Hulu to see if it if it still holds up or if it really, really
I'm
sucks.
Sure it doesn't.
I remember the Mix 103 FM days. Yep.
So since we don't have, you know, usually at this part I say, hey, head over to majorspoilers.com for all of our cool, awesome content. Well, we do have some cool, awesome content that will be going up over the next few days. But in
last
the meantime,
March, I had this to say.
Yes, exactly. Rodrigo was not with us last week because he was getting ready to go off to New York or Connecticut or some weird place on the East Coast.
Long tour of New England.
But the weekend before that was his birthday, and so he wasn't around for us to give him his birthday gifts.
Ooh.
So, Rodrigo, I now present you a bag of birthday gifts.
Wow.
For you to scavenge through and tell us what we got you.
All right, let's see.
De la vela a la luz, solo le la decir.
All
right. Que tu cumplas muchos años.
So here we go.
Okay.
Muchos años feliz.
Thanks.
Let me finish my song.
Well, and get Jeez. A suit in the process.
Yeah. Just because it's Spanish doesn't mean we're allowed to sing it. Actually, what was it? I saw some TV show and they were singing like, for she's a jolly good fellow for somebody's birthday. And I was like, that's lame. Anyway.
For she's a happy good day of. Thingy. They can't sue me in Spanish, can they?
Yes, they can.
El torta.
Los lawyers.
Yeah, and then I gotta spend Saturday. Saturday I gotta spend the afternoon in a room full of lawyers, so that was fun too.
I think
Rodrigo, what did you get? What'd you get?
Okay. First off, there is a Dungeons and Dragons miniature pack featuring
it's a Minotaur, I think.
Yeah, it's a Minotaur. A large Minotaur, like,
and I think eight other miniatures inside. Either eight or four. I can't.
Four, one visible and four random miniatures.
All right.
Yay!
So Rodrigo always needs more.
Ooh, a Star Wars omnibus Menace Revealed. Looks like it's got some
that,
Sith
that
action.
Follows up after apparently after Episode One.
Oh, nice. Star Wars Omnibus Tales of the Jedi Volume 1. Now, if you've listened to the show before, you've heard me rant and rave about Tales of the Jedi. Tales of the Jedi is where the idea for Knights of the Old Republic came
from. Okay. All right.
Knights of the Old Republic was originally a story arc in Tales of the Jedi. So that's badass. So I'm happy about that. And there's an additional Dungeons and Dragons miniature from the previous edition of the miniatures from Demon Web, which came out a while back.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Miniatures are miniatures.
But this was back when it was still a game.
Oh, okay. Oh, when it was a miniatures game.
Yeah. And now they've largely given up on that. This particular installment, booster set.
Right.
Actually features Kruthix, which are what monkey lizards are, which will be hilarious for Critical Hit.
Those are the little silver ones that I keep on saying, Rodrigo, use these, and you're like, no.
Well, I don't want to mix up your miniatures with mine.
Believe me, I've got a whole drawer full of these little silver bastards.
That's fine, Steven, but it goes both ways. I also don't want to leave my miniatures here.
That's fine, too.
Look, you can talk to D&D Brian about it. I have a strict no hippies.
Oh, look, there's still
policy.
More. There should be some more stuff down in the bottom of that bag.
And I got a gift card to Hastings.
And that's from Matthew.
Yay.
Yay.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate
it. I was going to get you one for B. Dalton, but
I did spend a lot of time at an airport. I should have looked.
I'm sure there was.
I should have looked for a B. Dalton.
I'm sure there
you
was.
Should
so,
have.
I also spent a lot of time in 1997. So
in the airport in 1997?
Yes. It was a time port.
Where was this? Hartford?
No, this was Danbury, Connecticut. And Danbury, it's funny because the only real difference that I could see between Danbury and Russell, Kansas is that there are trees in Danbury. Like, seriously, the town's pretty dead and full of old people.
All right, well, happy birthday, Rodrigo. We're so glad that you're with us and part of the Major Spoilers experience. So
thanks, guys.
Those are our gifts to you.
Yay,
man. Next year, when you're 21, I'll buy you some beer.
Speaking of, let's take this break while I drink this, and we'll come back and we'll talk about reviews.
Oh, wait, they'll sue us for that, too.
How to get a Major Spoilers shout-out. If you want to get a personalized shout-out at the top of the show, all you have to do is the following steps. Number one, visit majorspoilers.com. 2, click on the Make a Donation button. 3, donate $10 or more to the cause. 4, sit back and relax and hear Matthew butcher your name and say something cute about you. Major Spoilers, bringing the good stuff since 2006.
You know what? I really want to thank, you know, everybody who donated these last couple of days. I think the site needs to go down more often because the site goes down on Friday, and I bet you 50 people made donations over the weekend. So I want to thank all those people, and in fact, we're going to be thanking each and every one of you in upcoming shows. So thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. We did get.
I shall be mispronouncing many, many names.
We did get an email this week. I don't know if it's a comment as so much, or it's not really a question as much as it is a comment. Hey, gang, big fan of Critical Hit, which is how I spotted your other podcast. After listening to one of your recent podcasts about getting movies into your home theater the day of release, I stumbled upon something interesting in the Zune store. Don't ask me. I don't know why he's going to the Zune store.
Steven's a bit of a technology snob for those of you just joining us.
It turns out that George A. Romero's Survival of the Dead has been released on video on demand in the States on the 30th of April, while the theatrical release of the States isn't until May 28th. It's not a DVD release, but as long as you've got the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, Amazon account, or some other video-on-demand service, you can watch it right now. So hook that home theater up to your PC or gaming console and enjoy. That's from Steven. Well, you know, it's interesting because I would say go over to Major Spoilers because I wrote a big, long article about this. Mm-hmm. But and I think we talked about it last week.
Yeah, we talked about it.
About the MPAA coming out and saying, hey, we want to deliver releases to the home within the week of them being released in the theaters. But of course, that got all the theater people all in an uproar and in a tizzy.
That makes sense.
But, you know, they're moving towards that. So people are finally coming around to my way of thinking.
And you know, before when it would involve either sending a gigantic file to somebody's computer.
Right.
Or sending an actual physical copy, of course, that wasn't going to happen.
Right.
But now that you do have stuff like the Xbox 360 Marketplace or just your TiVo, whatever you're using, and they can send that directly, a one-time use file even.
Yep.
They, you know, that has a lot less, that can't be cracked as easy as just a file to your computer. You know, there's a lot more potential for it.
Well, and in fact, once you start using legal torrenting, then you can spread that across many people, and you're not creating a huge demand or load on one server.
Yep.
Which I don't think happened to Major Spoilers when it went down. So.
And if they play their cards right, this could actually be a boon to the theater goer. I mean, let's look at it this way. If I can go and sit in comfortable seating as opposed to sitting on my broken couch, by the way, my couch broke this week, and you know, pay $9 to see a movie as opposed to paying $45 to see it in my living room, it's not necessarily going to be the same experience. Sure. It's sure, not sure, like sure. This is ever going to wipe out theater going. You know, VHS didn't wipe out theater going. DVDs didn't wipe out theater going. Really, all it did was, you know, make porn that much easier to get. So,
yeah,
as with any technology, pornography will benefit.
Yeah. All right.
Really, I would say technology, not to go into this, but really technology benefits from pornography.
Right.
It's not that pornography benefits from technology.
Right.
Yes. Well, I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
No, there's a saying in the consumer electronics world every year because the at CES, they also have the AVN show, which goes on right across the street almost from the main convention center. And the big thing is everybody on the exhibit floor knows whichever way the porn industry goes, that's the way everybody will go. So if the porn industry...
go the sluts, there goes the industry.
Well, because the porn industry was quick to adopt Blu-ray, and we went to Blu-ray. They were the first to adopt HD video shooting for distribution. Not that you should be seeing a lot of that stuff in HD, but...
They've come up with good filters for that.
You know, that's the way it happens, so... There you go. All right, let's get on to some meat of the show, our reviews.
You said meat. Oh, wait, can I sing?
Go ahead.
Reviews.
Okay, this week we've got something new for this week and two titles from weeks past.
Something old, something new, something borrowed, something Bendis.
Yes, there you go. Why don't we start off with Bendis?
Indeed we shall. About, I want to say, almost 6 years ago now, Marvel Comics decided they were going to take their cue from DC and relaunch The Avengers as a book that actually combined all the top-tier recognizable characters. And so New Avengers was launched with Wolverine and Spider-Man and Iron Man and Captain America and a couple other schmucks, as every Avengers team has, under the hand of Brian Bendis, who at the time was best known for Powers. And now, in the new heroic age, the New Avengers is kind of passé. I mean, it was always about the darkness and the light and the fighting against the evil and the aliens among us and the Glaven. So this last week, Marvel released New Avengers Finale, the last issue of New Avengers, until the new number one issue of New Avengers comes out in 2 weeks. And I don't know. This actually ties strongly into our trade paperback review. I don't know if anybody knows what I mean when I say widescreen, big-time storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brian Hitch, who did The Ultimates, who did the trade paperback review, did this issue. And it's really, really weird because New Avengers has never been drawn by Brian Hitch.
Mm-hmm.
And New Avengers has never really been about the widescreen superheroic smash 'em up thing. So
right.
this is as much a change, as much a whole new reality as it is a finale. It takes place right at the end of Siege. And at the end of Siege, Norman Osborn is taken into custody. The Hood and his villains are out there floating around. Bad things have happened, blah, blah, blah. Spoiler alert. You can check it out in Major Spoilers. Within the next 48 hours, I'll have the review back up. But in any case, during this issue, the New Avengers, Captain America 9, Ms. Marvel, Mockingbird, Hawkeye, Luke Cage, Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Wolverine, and Jewel. Jessica Jones was named Jewel. If I become a superhero, I think I'm going to be named Matthew. Because it's just silly. And they decide they are going to go and finally hunt down the Hood and take out the Hood. For the last 5 years, Marvel's been trying to convince me that the Hood is a new big major player.
Yes.
This is the fifth time he's been powerless, but it's okay because his girlfriend is Madame Mask. Madame Mask's real name is Julieta Nefaria, and her daddy is Count Nefaria of the Magia, not to be confused with the Mafia, because as J. Edgar Hoover will tell you, there is no organized crime. Count Nefaria happens to have all the powers of Superman. So in this issue, we see the New Avengers go looking for the Hood and end up with a face full of Count Nefaria. And there's about five panels in here that are absolutely stunning, just incredible. Count Nefaria opens up on Ms. Marvel, full power with his laser heat vision. And he thinks he's gotten her, and she just stands there and says, "Everybody forgets that I can do this," and redirects the power right back in his face. And then there's the big fighty, 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 fighty. And it gets to the end where Superman is about to kill people, and Wolverine leaps in and chops his face open. That is a pretty impressive panel. It's one of about nine full-page splashes. And the New Avengers, yeah, the New Avengers have a flat-out, big-time, fight-the-super-powerful villain hero moment, and at the end it's revealed that Captain America is back from the dead, and now he's Nick Fury.
Wait, Captain America's back from the dead? Hasn't he been back from the dead for the last year?
Hush. Now he's back from the dead for real.
Oh, okay.
For reals, yo.
Okay.
And the Superhuman Registration Act is repealed, and Steve Rogers is made the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., and the last six or seven pages of the book are two-page splashes by the artists who drew the arcs of the book. So there's one by Lionel Yu.
Mm. Yeah, you're not a big Yu fan.
I am not a fan of you, Steve. I am not. But, we go through basically the last 5 years of New Avengers with big, beautiful two-page splashes, yeah. And we end it with the probably one of the most perfect Marvel moments of all time.
Which is?
Where they're talking about, what are you going to do? And the discussion comes and Luke Cage says, "One day I'm going to go for a walk." And the last two-page spread is all of the New Avengers walking through Central Park. Cage has his kid in a stroller, and Carol Danvers and Jessica... Which one is she? Jessica Jones is Jewel. I think Jessica, it doesn't matter. Basically, it's just people hanging out and having fun. And Peter Parker has his camera and he's taking pictures of his friends. The end.
Which that, is odd because, that, you know, in the latest reboot of the Ultimate Avengers and the Ultimate Universe, it starts out with them walking through the park.
Hmm. Yeah, isn't that also written by Brian Bendis?
It is.
Dun, dun, dun. So here's what happened, folks. He's going to tell the same stories in the Ultimate Universe that he's been telling, and in the Ultimate stories are now going to be in the Marvel Universe. We've done a super crossover. I may have made that part up. This is not a bad book. Now, I will say this. It's $4.99 on the cover, I believe. It's $5 worth of comic book. And I'd say you, for the first time, Marvel has given me content that I believe is truly worth $3.99. So it's a little overpriced, and the packaging and, you know, the big splashes, it seems to be more about, there's almost a spirit of, look how awesome we are, look how pretty these comics we made are, mommy.
Yeah.
But overall, not a bad issue. If you've been reading New Avengers from the beginning, it has a nice capstone, a nice ending. It's good to see the New Avengers who've been forced to run from Norman Osborn and run from the law, you know, just going out and being people.
Yeah.
Captain America in street clothes is creepy, by the way.
But, why? Because he looks like a normal guy? Or because he like still insists on wearing the pullover hood?
And he still has ears. Oh, okay. He's got little wings on his head.
Okay.
The wings aren't actually on the cowl. They're on his head. Namor has them on his ankles. Captain America has them on his forehead. It's not a bad book. Three slices of meatloaf overall. A little self-congratulatory, a little self-indulgent, but kind of a nice ending to the New Avengers dark and gritty era so that we can relaunch into the heroic age with new Avengers number one.
The new Avengers are new.
Yes, I'm going,
again.
I am going to be calling it new Avengers, by the way.
I wonder how long that'll stick. I wonder if that'll stick as long as the Ultimate Comics imprint is stuck around with their Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, which now only says Ultimate Spider-Man on the cover.
Mm. Well, you know, it's like you say about, what is it, Batman Confidential?
Yeah.
They never should have canceled Legends of the Dark Knight. It's exactly the same book.
Exactly.
They rebranded everything as Confidential, and it didn't stick. And I think they rebranded everything as All-Star, and it didn't stick. So we'll see how long the heroic age lasts. At the very least, they closed a chapter firmly without immediately jumping into the next big crossover.
Well, that's good. So 3.5 this slices of meatloaf.
Yeah. No, three.
Three.
Three right. Slices of meatloaf.
All right. Very, very cool. From Matthew, and that was out when?
That was out last week, the 15th, 13th. All right.
Excellent. Probably would have had that up on the site, but, you know.
Life sucks. Get a helmet.
Exactly. Moving on.
Right. Da-da-da-da.
Arrived to my house in a panic.
Yes, as I often do. I'm like, they're after me, Steven, help!
Steven, Gomer's turning around the car on Main. Wait, sorry.
Yep.
I was saying that Hayes is like Mayberry.
So it was, I was out of the state all weekend.
Yes, hobnobbing with the rich and famous.
That's right, with New England's elite, or maybe just New England's elite.
Spelled L33T.
7, Steven.
I'm sorry.
1337. They're not that elite. There's actually an actual E in there somewhere.
Yes, exactly.
That's just sad, you guys.
L-E-3-7.
That's just French for the 37. Anyway... 2.5 slices of meatloaf for Witchblade 136. Let's move on.
2.5 slices? Why?
Actually, it might just be 2.
Really?
Yeah.
Not that great, not that good. What's going on here?
This is part 3 of kind of the Witchblade Aphrodite 4 crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're familiar with Aphrodite 4, post in the comments because I'm not.
She's not as good as Aphrodite 9, I'll tell you that.
I thought it was Aphrodite IV. I thought she was like a nurse.
Only in your dreams, Matthew.
Now, I do know one thing about Aphrodite. Oh, yeah, I guess. Is Aphrodite IX like a different character?
That's 9, Aphrodite.
Yeah, Aphrodite IX is Aphrodite 9. This is Aphrodite 4. She was the prototype, I think.
Oh, I see. It's. Well, let's talk about the yard briefly.
Okay.
Stjepan Sejic.
Yep.
Who's cool. He's got his own style. It's very distinct. It's very cool. It's that kind of painted, very soft style. There's a couple, you know, there's a couple of times in this issue where it's like, it looks like I actually was looking at this and I was going to ask Steven if his son like drew over a part of it with a Sharpie. Did he draw over a part of it with a Sharpie?
Not that I know of. Let me see this.
Look at that. Like that's, there's this panel where Zara Pizzini's hair is being tossed around. What the heck is with that? There are a lot of places in it that where it looks like he just took a felt marker and just scribbled some hair or an outline or something like that. Like if you look at,
I think it's stuff that's supposed to be colored that wasn't colored in it. Isn't it supposed to be like part of the witch blade coming off of her?
I don't know.
Like it her helmet be. That wasn't, I mean, look at the side thing here and here. That it is might weird.
Be. Sometimes Aphrodite has these two like circles on her temples and like chin and stuff.
Yeah.
That kind of frame her face.
Yeah.
Sometimes those really look like they were just delineated by a Sharpie.
Wow, that's
and,
weird.
And, you know, filled in with the fill tool in Photoshop.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Some of it looks really kind of sloppy. Some of it looks great. There's a shot of two people having been murdered in an elevator. That looks good.
Yeah.
That's a good panel.
Yeah.
But it's not as good as I am used to seeing from him. The other issue is that this is part 3 of 3, so you would expect some big conclusion, and there isn't. Like, they just... Aphrodite just... beat like basically Kong's witchblade on the back of the head, or Sarah,
right,
and runs away, and then she gets kind of like a bridge that she's in gets blown up. It's not like they don't arrive someplace and like have a fight or have some kind of resolution to the arc. It's just they get someplace and then they go their separate ways, and that's the end of the arc.
That's weird.
Yeah, so it's not very satisfying. There's some fighting in which Witchblade or Sarah uses her amazing power and poorly defined powers to destroy 3 androids that have been giving them trouble before. It's like she's like, oh, I will now use my powers and kill them.
That's weird.
In one shot. Yes.
It's kind of like an Iron Man.
It's one of the, but it's not even explained by popping out 3 canisters, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a problem that I've always had with Witchblade and with other, you know, magic hottie type books.
Right.
Where their powers are, there's no definition to their powers.
We think Ron Mars has been writing this long enough that he would come up with a, this is what Witchblade is.
Yeah, but yes. no one's ever said, hey, what's the deal with the Witchblade? Everybody, I think a lot of people take this style of writing
as a MacGuffin and
at face value. They're just like, okay, well, she can do this. It's like, It's a literary thing. It's like you have a fight,
right,
and then the hero wins,
right.
And in a well written story, you have a fight, and then there's a reason for why the hero wins,
right.
In a poorly written story, we'll go ahead and say that you have a fight, and then for no reason the hero wins. Mm. And sometimes it seems that after fighting, Witchblade reaches to her forehead, pulls out her tiara, shouts out Moon Tiara Magic, and then blows up the bad guy. And this is something that's happened since the character was created. And the same thing is true for Darkchild and Wraithborn and other, you know, Jenna Jameson Shadowhunter.
Right.
You know, and you know, some of these books are sometimes well written, sometimes they're not. I'm not making a big, not necessarily completely lumping them all together, but it's always annoyed me that these poorly defined powers sometimes win and sometimes don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. So
really, it probably doesn't. I'm going to say this issue doesn't even deserve those 2.5 slices of meatloaf. I'm going to knock it down to 2 slices of meatloaf. It's below. Right. It's definitely below average.
2 slices of meatloaf for Witchblade number 136.
Correct.
All right, Rodrigo loves him some Witchblade.
Hey, you know, Rodrigo was pretty honest about a issue, was it last week, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And the writer wrote us and said, well, thanks, Rodrigo. Hope you enjoy the next one.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That was nice of him. And, you know,
he didn't jump all over your case.
He didn't. And he's like, well, here's my rationale for this and here's my rationale for that. And I could definitely see it.
Yeah. So
I am cool. I am looking forward to issue 3 of American Vampire.
Cool. Can't wait. All right, my review. New comic out this week. Atomic Robo, Revenge of the Vampire, Dimension number 3, or as I call it, 4.3, since this is our fourth volume of the Atomic Robo series. Now, way back in 2009, some of you may remember a free comic book day edition of Atomic Robo that featured this character, Dr. Dinosaur. It was a rollicking battle of the minds, hilarious on all fronts. Mm-hmm. It's free still. You can get it over at either the Red 5 or the Atomic Robo website. And it really literally ended with a big bang. Now, the title of that story was Why Atomic Robo Hates Dr. Dinosaur. And from the story, we pretty much understand why this talking velociraptor is a big pain in the behind for Robo. Mm-hmm. What we never really did was discover how did these two meet, how did they become enemies, so on and so forth. Well, guess what? Flash forward to this week when Dr. Dinosaur returns in this all-new adventure that actually takes place before Free Comic Book Day 2009. Mm-hmm. So in your timeline, time-traveling, time-tripping thing, you're going to have to do a little math and to figure out where everything lines up.
Dude, I'm a Legion reader. We're fine.
There you go. So Dr. Dinosaur really, it is a great character.
Is he male?
We don't know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we guess so, but we don't know. He's like this mad scientist that is better than any mad scientist villain ever created. And I mean ever created. He is so far over the top.
How over the top is he?
It just turns out to be some quite funny. So check this line out from the book. He says he's going to cut off Atomic Robo's head, and he was going to send it to all the heads of state. And this is him quoting, "It will be a sign to all humanity that their pathetic civilization is not but a flotsam in the great sea of history. The dinosaurs are ready to reclaim their rightful place as kings of the world." And then Dino says, they're all going to get that from, Robo says they're going to get that all from a head in the box. He goes, "Do not be inane. I shall include a note." And the note literally says, "This is a sign to all humanity that your pathetic civilization is not but flotsam in the great sea of history. The dinosaurs are ready to reclaim their rightful place as kings of the world. Sincerely, Sks." Now, check this out. He literally signs it H', 4 S's and a K. Uh-huh. This is Dr. Dinosaur's real name.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really cool is he wants to bring dinosaurs back and have them rule the world. And so he's able to capture Robo, and he's able to, contain him for the most part with crystals and science.
Science!
That's right.
Good heavens, Miss Takamoto, you're beautiful.
So when Robo finds out that this guy's name is Sk, he goes, "What kind of name is that? No one's going to take you seriously. How do you pronounce it?" And it just starts on this whole big ball rolling down the path of Robo and Sk having this great conversation about what name should be chosen and all these things back and forth. And suddenly, Robo's action scientists break in to save him.
Mm-hmm.
And Robo's like, "Shoot this thing." And one of them goes, "Shoot that Dr. Dinosaur." And then all of a sudden you see Dr. Dinosaur going, "Oh." Now, this is the problem that I've now in my mind, which actually makes this character even funnier.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew, you probably have watched this show. And Rodrigo, knowing you, you've probably watched this show. You've watched a show called Phineas and Ferb on the Disney Channel, correct?
Yes.
Herbius and Ferbius, yep.
Yes. The mad scientist, Dr. Doofenshmirtz, has that high-pitched kind of, "Oh, it's Perry the Platypus. Oh, I've caught you in my trap.
Curse you, Perry the Platypus."
Now, do that as Dr. Dinosaur saying, "It will be the sign to all humanity that their pathetic civilization is not but a flotsam in the jetsam of Atomic Robo. We meet again. Ah, Perry the Platypus, I've caught you in my evil trap." There's even a part where Robo wakes up floating in this containment unit, and he simply says, "Oh, so I see you've got me caught in this blue containment unit, anti-gravitational containment unit." And Dr. Dinosaur says, "Why, no, the blue is just mood lighting, see?" And he flips off the light, and then he flips it back on. And it keeps going like that and going that through the entire issue. The art
Dinosaur Evil Incorporated.
Exactly. The art by Scott Wegner is always great. I always love his stuff. The words coming out of Brian Clevenger's head has never been funnier or more fun or whatever. It's a riot, okay? And it just comes off perfectly in this issue as robot and dinosaur try to communicate with one another. Matthew and Rodrigo, I know you guys have hinted that we should probably review Atomic Robo, an Atomic Robo trade in the future. And hey, I'm all for that because there's some great stuff coming out of Red 5 Comics. So it should be no surprise then when I give this Atomic Robo number 3, Revenge of the Vampire Dimension, 5 slices of meatloaf.
Wow.
Ooh, Revenge of the Return of the Son of the Return of the Revenge of the Jedi.
It's also now, what's really cool.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is the vampire dimension actually still involved in the storyline?
No, what had happened with this storyline and what has thrown a lot of people is that it was only just supposed to be called like a series. It was only supposed to be a series of short stories contained. Well, the first one just so happened to be called Revenge of the Vampire Dimension.
Okay.
And they stuck that on the title and the duo said, "Eh, we'll go ahead and run with it."
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a series of stories. Okay. In this volume called Revenge of the Vampire Dimension.
Wow.
So.
They're not writing for the trade at all, are they?
No, they're really not. But, you know, if you guys go out this week, anybody, you, Matthew, listeners, if you go out this week and you want to get one comic that you're going to love, pick up this book. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you, this is a great laugh from beginning to end. It's great fun. It builds on this Dr. Dinosaur mythos, which I hope they continue to bring back again and again. He's a great comic foil wrapped up in this mad evil velociraptor scientist.
Wait, he's wrapped in foil?
Yes, and so I'm sure at some point he will be wrapped in foil. He is carrying a giant, what is that, the Jaws of Life kind of saw that he's going to cut Atomic Robo's head off on. And then it's just the end of the story. If we want to know why Atomic Robo hates Dr. Dinosaur from Free Comic Book Day, the title of this particular episode is Why Dr. Dinosaur Hates Atomic Robo.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a really great thing here, and it's just too bad that this wasn't Free Comic Book Day material, because this would have been perfect for it. But it's well worth the whatever price they're paying. If they're charging you $15 for it at your comic book store, pay $15 for it. It's worth it. So that wraps it up for our reviews this week.
And when the reviews
and there are more reviews over at the major spoiler sites. There really are. We've got Batman 699 coming up shortly. We've got Siege number 4 from a couple of weeks back. We've got a lot of reviews coming up, so be sure to check the major spoilers website. And after the reviews...
I'm sorry, what? I was distracted by all the reviews available on major spoilers.
Well, look at this.
It's time for the poll of the week.
Yay, the poll of the week.
The poll of the week.
Sent in from one of our listeners. He didn't really call it the Ryan Reynolds edition, but I said, aha, I see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
He puts Green Lantern up against Deadpool. And, you know, Ryan Reynolds is in both of those movies as the star. So we thought it's time to go ahead and bring back the fighty-fighty and put Green Lantern and Deadpool in the ring together and find out who emerges victorious. Rodrigo, go.
Well, it's a difficult decision for me because I feel that apart from working existing in different universes, Deadpool and Green Lantern exist in like two separate wavelengths, kind of. Like, so I would have trouble like even visualizing a serious fight. Because it wouldn't be serious.
It wouldn't be serious
between these two. And of course, then you have to figure out which Green Lantern and which Deadpool, since now there are like 15 different universe versions of Deadpool.
Right.
So, but if you have, you know, Hal Jordan versus Wade Wilson, I would imagine probably in the end, the person that would win would be Hal Jordan at great loss to him.
At great loss to Hal Jordan.
Either something terrible would happen to whatever else was going on that Hal Jordan cared about.
Right.
Or he would somehow lose a lot of face in the core or in the superhero community despite having defeated Deadpool. Like, Deadpool would rig it so that Oa blows up.
Yeah.
As Hal Jordan is capturing him.
Well, there you go. All right. Interesting. Interesting take. Matthew.
Yes, I have to echo a little bit of what Rodrigo said. It's not even that there, you know, one is more of a serious character and one is more of a comedic character. To me, it's not even a question of, you know, different universes. It's a question of Hal Jordan is cosmic level powered.
Right.
And Wade Wilson is a dude with a gun with maybe a high white blood cell count. That's pretty much the shtick of it. So there's no reason for these two people to ever really interact. You know, it's like saying who would win in a fight, Wolverine or Galactus? Mm-hmm. Well, first Wolverine. Of all, why would Galactus ever fight Wolverine?
Because it makes for great reading at $5.99.
Shut your face.
I guarantee you, Marvel.
The day that I pay $5.99 for a comic that doesn't have boobs in it is the day that they start charging $5.99 for the comics.
It's got whatever. Wolverine and Galactus in it. Those should be boobs enough, right? Anyway, on with your great thinking about Deadpool versus Green
Lantern. Speaking of boobs, Steven. Yvalt. I think that it really, when you break it down, if you look at it as a superhero battle, it doesn't make sense. If you look at it as, you know, Marvel versus DC battle, they're not analogous. So it would, you know, it wouldn't make sense. If you were looking at it in terms of which Ryan Reynolds character is going to be more fun, obviously you'd have to choose the answer that I chose. And I say that, Van Wilder wins this fight hands down. You know, Tommy, call me nuts if you want. Write that down. So, yeah, I'm going to vote with Van Wilder.
All right. Rico says it depends. Does the Green Lantern get to use deadly force or not? Because unless you kill him, Deadpool doesn't know when to give up, stop, brush his teeth, bathe, spell his own name, cut his nail without cutting his finger off. He literally is an insane cockroach with a method to his madness. Hal is a space cop with the most powerful weapon ever made. But my money will always go with the crazy Canadian. Rule of thumb, don't bet against insanity. Plus, his yellow and white boxes would make it a three-on-one. Boxers? Okay, would make it a three-on-one fight.
No, he's talking about the caption boxes that Deadpool uses.
There you go. Carl says
Deadpool has two voices in his head, and one of them's yellow.
There you go. Carl says, the thing is, GL would pick him up and drop him on an alien planet without getting within a mile of Deadpool. What does Deadpool have to come close to in the range of a power ring?
Insanity. Body slide by one.
There you go.
Complicity of the writer.
Yes. Yes, that's always a good one. I went with Green
Deadpool's
Lantern.
Deadpool's superpower is whatever's funny, so.
Right. I went with Green Lantern. Big old hammer to the head, squash.
Mm.
One punch. The mook. All right, you can head over to majorspoilers.com. You can cast your vote in this. What's the vote up to now, Matthew?
295 votes, 70% of the people agreeing with you saying that Green Lantern would win the fight. Strangely enough, still 30% of the people are still firmly on Deadpool's side. So roughly nearly 100 people now are saying that Deadpool would beat Green Lantern.
Yeah, 30-1 odds. I mean,
you got to love them.
You could win. Vegas would take those odds, I bet.
I don't know if I would.
All right, everybody, we're going to be right back after this important message from the Dexter 102 to talk about The Authority.
Authority.
The site is down, but we're still on air. It's the Major Spoilers Podcast, and my name is the Dexter 102, speaking with his voice to give you a 61-second review of Stanley Kubrick's space classic, 2001, A Space Odyssey, with a colon, you know. So, here we go. 2001, A Space Odyssey, in 61 seconds, starting from now. Right. I know it's a classic. Before I say anything, I know it's a classic. I know that when it went out, it was the height of technology and the height of storytelling and the height of sci-fi, and it became so popular so quickly, and it probably made Stanley Kubrick's name. That and The Shining. But we have to look at it, because of all of that, we have to look at it as, does it stand up as a film today? And the answer is no. It's 2 hours, 21 minutes of boredom. There are a few redeeming features of it. Mainly that it was parodied on The Simpsons, and it gives us brilliant sci-fi, such as the pure genius of Moon and the shiny happy people loveliness of Star Trek. But it's just so boring, and I know I'm going to be called unclean for that, but that's the fact of the matter. It's slow and baggy, and at times it feels disjointed, and the musical sequences, as much as I like the music, just don't work. I give it 1.5 slices of meatloaf, and I can hear the rotten cabbages flying already. Thank you very much for listening to my ramblings today. I've been the Dexter 102. Keep listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, because now we have the trade paperback review of the week. Woo! Peace and love.
I fell in love at the Apple Store. And I think I may come back for more.
Hi, Major Spoilers. This is Heath from Pittsburgh. I'm going to say a few words about The Authority, which was a title I actually picked up issue for issue when it first came out, you know, probably about 10 years ago. I don't think it's a comic that's really been able to hold up over the last 10 years, and I'll say why. It was really the first to do the big splash pages as a major part of its content. And that widescreen approach nowadays has become really basic. At the time, I think it was pretty groundbreaking and really caught the eye, and especially in the art of Brian Hitch, who really cut his teeth on The Authority. It was really, the work he did on The Authority was a foundation for a lot of what he did on The Ultimates later. But what really, what failed with the widescreen approach was the way it really wasn't able to capture a lot of the characterizations that become so important in plot development for comics now. There was really more characterization of villains, I thought, in those first few issues, which I think was necessary to make them credible threats, especially because you have a team with almost four or five nearly omnipotent characters. And I do love these characters, the Doctor, Apollo and Midnighter being some of the first openly gay characters, and not as a major plot point, just as a given for their characters. Hawksmoor, a great character that was never really well utilized until his own miniseries that came out just a few years ago with art by Fiona Staples, which I highly recommend. Anyway, I'm a big fan of The Authority, and I still follow them, although they've gone through some major changes. But for the first two or three storylines, I'd really only give it about 2.5 stars. Really appreciate the podcast, guys. Thanks.
Hello, I would like to say that you're too mean on the podcast to Matthew, because he sometimes is funny, and you should be not so mean to him. And also let him say part of the week more often. Like, say, 6 to 10 times in an hour. This has been a Cobra. Thank you.
Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for all of your kind comments. Even the insane ones we appreciate every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. You know, that guy made some really strong points. That's all I'm saying.
Pointed head, maybe. Anyway, if you would like to call in and leave your comments, thoughts, ideas, suggestions, whatever they may be, we want you to call our Major Spoilers hotline at...
727-1939. I think the hard drive crashed in my brain.
Probably. All right. That's the major.
Is that why I'm smelling
hotline?
Burning hair? I'm having a brain aneurysm. 785-727-1939. The Major Spoilers Fugue State.
I think it actually is. If you smell burning something, you're mm-hmm. experiencing some kind of an aneurysm.
That's okay. Good to know.
Well, I'll just have the pink and green sumo wrestler in the corner take me to the hospital.
Then. All right. This week, we're going to be talking about The Authority from Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch. That's right. We're looking at the Absolute Edition of The Authority, the first 12 issues, that features mm-hmm. Jenny Sparks,
mm-hmm.
Apollo, Jack Midnighter, Hawksparrow. Who? Jack mm-hmm. Hawksparrow, Spooner.
Jack Hawksmore, you student. Swift, Apollo, the Midnighter, the Doctor, and the Engineer.
Yes, exactly.
The Millionaire and his wife.
And we get introduced, I don't know if it was introduced here or not, but we get introduced to the Bleed in this series, which later becomes a big to-do when they unleash Final Crisis upon the world and bring back the 52 Earth.
This is the first appearance of the Bleed, yes.
That's as close as I can come to it. There was a couple other questions. I guess when we get into the second arc, I have some specific questions for you, Matthew. But let's go ahead and talk about The Authority. And Matthew, why don't we give us a real quick 30-second rundown of the first four issues, the first arc.
The first arc of The Authority does come out of the last arc of a previous book called Stormwatch. And a villain named Kaizen Gamora, who was taken out, I believe, comes back. And it's one of those moments where somebody wrote a cool story that had a twang at the end.
Yeah.
Where it turns out that Kaizen Gamora was never really Kaizen Gamora. And this is like, oh no, this is really the really real Kaizen Gamora. And basically starts attacking the world with superpowered clones of himself.
Yes, and that's pretty much it in a nutshell, and these guys have to come together, and they have to put a stop to it.
Right.
And along the way, we kind of, I don't know, to be honest with you, I've not read a lot of The Wildstorm. I'm familiar with Apollo and Midnighter because of their analogs in the Earth Prime, or not Earth Prime, but Earth One area. Hmm. But where do we get all of these characters from, Matthew? Are they all from Stormwatch, the Apollo, Midnighter, Jenny Sparks, these people from Stormwatch?
They really aren't. Swift was a member of Stormwatch.
Okay.
Jenny Sparks was briefly a member of Stormwatch, but Jenny Sparks was also a kind of an analog character. When Warren Ellis was writing Stormwatch, he started doing, you know, takes on comic book tropes. And Jenny Sparks was basically, she was created as an immortal character. He called her the spirit of the 20th century.
Right.
And Jenny Sparks went through different eras. There's a great issue where Jenny Sparks does talk about what happened to Jenny Sparks in the 80s. And there's a whole Watchmen pastiche. And Jenny Sparks in the 20s doing a whole Dan Dare riff.
Right.
The Engineer and the Doctor came from an arc of Stormwatch where, again, playing with archetypes, they took Stormwatch and fought against basically the big superhero archetypes, a Superman type, a Wonder Woman type. Oddly enough, the Shadow trope was in there. Superman, Wonder Woman, basically the Shadow, Green Lantern, the Flash. I believe the Engineer was basically just kind of the epitome of the whole, you know, the tech wizard hero thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I mean,
all these characters came from this series, Stormwatch?
Sort of, yeah. Apollo and the Midnighter were actually villains in Stormwatch. The previous versions of the Midnighter and the Engineer were Jack Hawksmoor and Jenny Sparks were minor characters, and then Swift was a long-term member of Stormwatch who then transitioned over.
So I guess this is my problem for someone who's never read it before, is coming into this book, last week Rodrigo made the crazy Asian stereotype villain remark, and that's what we get here, which I find, on the heels of that last conversation, and find that hysterically funny in that sense, because that's exactly what this character is. But for everyone else, I'm like, okay, I know who at least two of these characters are, but really I have no idea what the F is going on as we approach this first arc. And really in the first arc, we get little to no backstory except for here are the tropes that you probably have seen before in other books. You've got the Dr. Fate character, you've got the Hawk Girl character, you've got the Steel, what's Steel's daughter's name? What does she play?
Steel.
Is that her name in the...
Natasha Iron.
Steel. Okay. So you've got all of those characters kind of floating around, so I kind of know what's going on, but for someone to just step into this book without having read Stormwatch, I think might be a little bit of an injustice.
I think you're overestimating how much context you're going to get from your average issue of Stormwatch.
Well, let me tell you this though. That being said, there's not a lot of catching up you have to do.
Yeah.
In this book.
Well, and really they just drop you right in the middle of it, and they tell you there's a scene in which there's two characters who are relevant to Stormwatch, but doesn't matter who they actually are, basically going, doesn't it suck how they outlawed superheroes? Yeah, yep. Now there's like all these bad guys fighting us. I wish there was a superhero group. Jenny Sparks, what are you doing here? I'm putting together a superhero group. Bam.
Yeah.
The Authority.
But I guess some of the things like
that would actually, I think that's actually literally where the screen goes black and you just see the Authority come across.
But I think things
and
like
the letters
relationship,
move towards
the relationship between Apollo and the Midnighter. You don't know about this going in. If you don't know that they're gay, then you're going to be totally, what? Whenever you discover it.
Isn't that the point of having a character be gay, though?
No, I don't think so. No, I'm not saying that, hey, you might better be aware that there's gay characters in here before you start reading this book, The Authority. It's going to corrupt the nation. No, I'm just saying that once you understand that they do have that relationship, then when you read their conversations, it makes a lot more sense, I think.
Yeah, but even then, in the context of the story, it comes up.
Right. It does, but it doesn't come up as, I don't know,
Like, you don't one think of the, there's, one no, of the comments there's no is, beat for it?
Right. One of the comments from the Midnighter to the Apollo is, oh, you're just gritching like an old woman or something like that. And mm-hmm. so anybody could make that comment. But when you hear it in the context of these two are lovers, then you are like, oh, there's the marital spat that those two are, you know, having kind of thing. And so that makes it a little bit more interesting. So I find that going into this, it doesn't take you long to figure out what's going on, but some people might want to do a little research into some of the characters or at least some of the main overarching concepts in Stormwatch before proceeding with this volume. Mm-hmm. Rodrigo?
Some degree.
I think throughout the whole book, they actually spend a lot of time going back over, not all too thoroughly, but at least they do that comic book thing.
Right.
That comic book thing where somebody explains their powers as they're using them.
Yes.
Every time they use them. Yes. So it's like, I've got machine blood. I can do stuff in cities. I know things.
Yes.
I can shoot laser bolts from my nose.
What was the release schedule on this, Matthew? Was it very regular?
It was monthly, yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, I can understand, like, in last week's Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, right, when you have a year in between issues, that, yeah, you might want to spend a panel or two where the Midnighter is like, I've already fought this fight 1,000 times in my mind. I know every action you're going to take before you take it. You're dead in one drop. Da, 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 da. You know, and he does that a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Okay, I didn't know if that's his shtick or if you really needed to explain, hey, these nanobots are in my blood, and I can create a rocket pack on my ass kind of thing. So that's kind of the overall going into this book that I felt. But yeah, I mean, like I said, once you get into it, there's not a whole lot. I mean, it's superpowered beings are attacking these three cities. We find out from the evil Chinese stereotype that it's because he wants to mark the planet as his own. The authority steps in and puts a stop to him by dropping a huge 50-mile-long spaceship on his ass. Which, that last bit where it's just this huge, you know, 35-mile-high ship careening into the tower and the bad guy going, I just wanted to have fun, is just a great moment. But then, as we get into some of the other stories, and I think some of the backstory and I think some of the universe building that goes on in this is kind of neat, but it always seemed like, as we get into the other two stories, it's, we're omnipotent, and so we're going to do whatever we want. We're going to use our godlike powers to drop in and drop a ship on you. And we're going to drop a ship on you again. And then maybe later we're going to drop the ship on you again. Which just seems, I don't know, it just seems like, wow, how many times are you going to go to the well with that? With that story idea.
That's what they do. Well, let's talk about what this predates. This predates
The Boys.
Justice League Unlimited, which is a very similar story. Mm-hmm. It predates The Boys, which is a somewhat similar story.
Right.
It predates a lot of what Marvel has done in recent years with, you know, Secret Warriors, New Avengers, Fantastic Four. The current run of Fantastic Four is very much influenced like this. This is a 10-year-old story.
Yeah.
This, you know, predates The Ultimates, which is a similar story. I think that this book, these 12 issues, really pale more in comparison with what came after than they do with themselves. Generally, I am the guy who says, you weren't there, man. You don't know. But when this came out, first of all, it came out from Image. And I've made it clear what 90s Image was to me. You know, it's 15 guys whose names are synonyms for fight on a team with blood in the cover, you know? Death Strike Blood Force.
Right.
But this was a point where I started really taking, and at the time, Wildstorm was Jim Lee's publishing arm of Image. He was one of the seven Image founders.
Right.
So this book actually came out either from Image or right around the time of the transition where Wildstorm was sold to Warner Publications. But this was something where Stormwatch was pretty straightforward heroics and, you know, kind of formulaic heroics. It was, it was like, and here's a girl with wings and a guy with blades, and the guy with blades is Japanese and the girl with the wings is Chinese and they hate each other. And, you know, there were some things going on that were just really kind of cliche. And Warren Ellis walked in and went, no. And
went absolutely BF crazy all over the series and, you know, turned the main central superhero, the Captain Picard figure, into the ultimate villain, turned everything on its head. And then once he had done that, they said, you know what, we're going to give you the authority. And every month the authority was 24 issues, 24 pages of, and then this,
right. Well, you know, I know we talk about how Warren Ellis and Garth Ennis are the same person. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just different driver's licenses.
And Grant Morrison.
Yeah. And Grant Morrison. Because, you know,
he changed his name for tax purposes.
You talk about the authority turning everything on its ear. To me, it really doesn't, to be honest. Mm. But then when you look at Garth Ennis's The Boys, then you're like, now that's turning the trope on its ear. I still find the characters very interesting. The main characters that I find most interesting, of course, in this entire book, Jenny Sparks. Mm-hmm. I find her incredibly fascinating. And Midnighter. And whatever's going on with King of Cities?
Hawksmoor.
Hawksmoor. I just find those three characters are the most interesting. But as we get into that third arc, I find the Jack Hawksmoor character kind of starting to loosen to some extent in my interest. But he's still, you know, those are the three, in my opinion, favorite characters. Rodrigo, do you have some favorite characters in this?
I thought it was funny that there's a character named the Doctor.
Yes.
who has had previous incarnations.
Yes.
It's clear that they're not going for a Doctor Who thing.
Right.
You know, but I just, you know, when I was like, especially because they call him out first, they're like, well, where's the Doctor? And I'm like, oh, no way.
Yeah.
He gets around, but no way he's going to be in a Wildstorm book, right?
Right. Well, but when you think about what, I mean, except for the time and time issue,
mm-hmm.
the ship that they're in
is like
the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's infinitely huge, which this is the first time we're introduced to the ship, right, Matthew?
The transport.
I believe the ship may have appeared. The transport appeared at the tail end, like the last two or three issues of the Stormwatch that led to the authority, I believe.
Okay, because I also just found it interesting that it seemed like, in addition to some universe building of these characters in this new world that they're in, we're also spending a large amount of time showing how this ship can transcend all these different planes and all mm-hmm. these different concepts and realities and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, by the way, it can drop on top of an island and kill anybody in it, you know, that kind of stuff. That farting sound you just heard was the ship.
The carrier.
The carrier, yeah.
Yep.
And just I don't know, do you watch Red 5? Rodrigo, have you ever watched that? Matthew, have you watched Red 5? Isn't that ship also super huge?
Red Dwarf,
I'm sorry, yeah.
Red 5 makes comments.
Yeah, sorry, Red Dwarf.
Yeah,
I've seen Red Dwarf.
Is that similar to what the carrier is?
Well, they actually mention the carrier's proportions, and they're like
50
gigantic.
Miles, yeah, 50 miles long by 35 miles high.
Yeah.
How does someone get around in that ship? Does that play off later? I'm more interested in the ship than anything
segways.
Else.
Not really. There's not a whole lot given to the carrier. There are points where it's hinted that the carrier is sentient.
Yeah.
And there's a really great issue, the authority crossing over with Planetary. We're Elijah Snow of Planetary, and we have to cover Planetary in the near future, by the way. Elijah Snow of Planetary teleports to the back of the carrier 50 miles away from them and tries to sabotage it.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, that's brilliant. I love that. That's so smart, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't believe that the carrier is really the point. The carrier is kind of the MacGuffin.
Right. But I mean, because it just plays a bigger role later in DC history. With the big fight that goes on when they bust through, Monarch is essentially using the carrier as his launching platform to attack people later in that final.
Do you really believe that having Monarch use the carrier bigger things?
To Steven, you have to kind of see it from his, and here I'm extrapolating, but they're like, okay, here's the pitch. There's a superhero team, right? And they ride on this ship that has these specs. And anyway, then there's this Chinese stereotype that tries to attack, and Steven's like, whoa. What's the deal with the ship? Oh, well, the ship can, like, transcend time and space, and it's 5,000 billion miles long. But anyway, so they jump in, like, wait. How is it handled? Is it alive? Is it moving? Is it, are the doors open? Does it have a cafeteria?
You know what?
How many cafeterias does it have?
those questions are answered. I mean, they will spend a splash page talking about the carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And giving you specs and dimensions and talking about its sentience and talking about now it's floating through the dreamscape of all of the psychic minds of the universe building on their land. And now we're crossing over into the bleed. And now we're in the tranquil seas of such and such. And now we're crashing down on top of an island. And now we're blowing up this parallel Earth in the way that Independence Day did with the White House. Mm-hmm. You know, all these kinds of things. And so it's the ship is a very, in my view of it, an interesting character that does play a role later on. And this whole concept of the bleed plays a role later on as we get the multiverse back in the DC universe.
Well, as a Mac user, I imagine the idea of a sentient machine of infinite capacity that can control us all is somewhat familiar and, you know, appealing to you.
So in the second arc, so they defeat, you know, they drop a ship on the island and kill it, right?
And kill the Mandarin.
Kill everybody is my guess. A 50-mile ship comes down to knock over a tower, it's also wiping out everybody else on that
And they talk about that.
Yeah. In the second arc, we're introduced to the concept of parallel Earths. Mm-hmm. And on another parallel Earth, aliens came down and had peaceful contact with the Monarchs. They started to interbreed, and they developed these blue people and the regular human race, and the blue aliens want to continue their conquest of that Earth so that they can breed more blue people.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized...
Wait, is this the movie Avatar?
Well, you tell me. At some point, that Earth is corrupt, and they go back to their old technology so they can penetrate into this Earth. Because at one point, Jenny Sparks and the British government had contact with this parallel Earth. And they begin to attack. And we learn about the Regis and all these other characters. We find out, and what are these people called? The Abalons?
Albion. Albion is the name of the...
Sliding Albion is the alternate reality.
Now, these blue people, Matthew.
Hmm.
This is not the same place where the 1970s Starman comes from, is it?
No. Starman comes from the planet Talok 3.
All right. Because they just, you know, the blue skin and the guy that they meet in the present, the white hair, and I'm just like, oh, I wonder if there's something there that we don't know about. And if we're trying to stretch something else out and try to create a tie to give people hints that there's a bigger connection between the Wildstorm universe and the DC universe.
I think that's just...
Well, at this time, the Wildstorm universe wasn't yet part of the DC universe, I don't think.
I think that's just a case of two colors that pretty much always look good together, you know, kind of
Blue, yeah.
Yeah, like electric blue and white.
Did you like the second arc, Rodrigo?
I didn't like any arcs.
Matthew, why does that second arc work or not work? And then we'll counter it with Rodrigo's further explanation of why it doesn't work.
I feel of the three arcs, the second arc is probably the most effective overall in that it has more consequence.
Yeah.
The whole point of the Authority is bad guys do bad things, and we're so damn powerful that we just come in and wipe them off the face of the earth. It's the Kevin Nash squash theory. You have Bill Goldberg winning and winning and winning, and finally somebody has to come in and be so powerful that he takes him down. So, I mean, at the time, comics were very much on a street level, everybody is Batman kind of thing.
Right.
Even Batman is double Batman. And we're all Daredevil and we're all ninjas, you know, and it gets old. And as part of, I think, a paradigm shift, we went to this book where everything was like, wah, now we're going to blow it all up, you know. So I think that the second one works because it gives us some more backstory. It gives us more Hawksmoor. It gives us a lot more Jenny Sparks. And, you know, I believe in the second arc is where we start actually getting character bits for the Doctor and for Apollo and the Midnighter.
Yeah, and Jenny Sparks, too. That's what I really liked about her, because we see Jenny Sparks in the Dan Dare, Buck Rogers era. We see her in the 1950s. We see her now, you know, essentially she's kind of a Doctor character, too, where she's contacting this British government secret agent, you know, saying, hey, this is my access code. Let me in. I want to go talk with my husband, who we find out was one of these aliens.
Yep.
And it's just fascinating to see how her character builds and develops. Beyond that, again, it just seems like, we're all powerful, Smash!
Mm-hmm.
We're watching you, So watch out.
Yep.
And I don't ever see, even in the third arc, really, I don't really ever see danger, never get a sense, a feeling of these guys are ever having any difficulty in anything that they will ever come across.
And that's the point of the authority. The whole, I mean, the name says it. These guys are the last word. So they're not going to get involved with Ms. Lion running away from home or somebody stealing Aunt May's pocketbook. When there is no one else who can respond, the authority will come in and they will respond with extreme prejudice and, you know, a little of the old ultra violence. So it's, I don't want to say it's not a thinking comic book because there are a lot of, you know, thoughtful processes going into it. And there are a lot of things where you look at it and you go, well, here's, you know, here's kind of what that story might be saying, or here's an analog or something you can work into it. But this is about squash matches. This is about the heroes winning and the heroes winning as loudly as possible and the heroes just blowing the crap out of anything that dares to stop them.
Right.
You know, for me, I really, really didn't like the authority. And it's kind of like a multiple tiered, like hate. Multiple reasons, yes, as to why I didn't like it. At its widest, like from the widest angle, looking at the entirety of these three arcs that we read, I didn't like it because it told me the same story three times.
Right.
The story is some big evil thing whose job is basically to be evil.
Right.
And has very little, although in the third one, it's kind of a little bit different. But this big evil thing destroys a major metropolitan area.
Los Angeles twice.
Right. The authority shows up. They fight. At some point during that fight, one of the characters from the, like, basically this happens during the fight. Big crazy thing starts to overwhelm the authority. One of the characters goes, I am going to have to use my power. And then they use their power, beat back the flood of monsters or Prussians. and then after that happens, when they use that power that they always have access to,
right?
Somebody, either they themselves or another character goes, hot damn, that was hot.
Yeah.
And this happens three times.
Right.
What you've just described for me is Dragon Ball Z.
And that's partially the problem.
But isn't that also partially the good part?
No. Dragon Ball Z is not a good show. Dragon Ball Z is, like, when people, like, people that are, okay, I don't want to say people that are into Dragon Ball Z. what is attractive about Dragon Ball Z is the style. The reason why Dragon Ball Z was groundbreaking is because that generation of people hadn't been exposed to anime before.
Right.
So they were like, wow, look at how fast this cartoon moves. That's insane. But there's no plot there. There's no substance. And the authority was kind of the same thing for me. And by the way, that third thing is basically the plot line to Chrono Trigger, which I think is like the second show in a row that I've mentioned Chrono Trigger. Good game.
This is if you can find an NES. The planet is being overrun by
this
a life
is where
form
that, this is where a life form comes to the Earth, terraforms it to begin with, and then comes to eat you.
Yeah.
Didn't make it
all the way to the end of that one, gotta say.
Yeah. But it's the same deal. And it's the same deal three times. On a smaller scale, it's kind of the same issue of the characters going, hot damn, you are awesome, other character, I know.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And I recognized that they were doing the comic book thing of like, well, I had to take out my blood and fill it with robots, so this is why I can do this, and that's fine.
Right.
But the characters, to me, are too powerful. And they're all just kind of, it's not like the doctor is a shaman and thus behaves like a shaman, or
right.
The engineer is a robot girl and thus behaves like a robot girl. They are all the same character. They just have a different power source.
Right.
You know, the only character, there's only two characters for me that are a little different. Well, technically three. Jenny Sparks, because mm-hmm. her job is to be bossy. Like,
right.
That's her superpower. She is super bossy.
Right.
And also can destroy a wave of monsters after powering up.
Right.
Like everybody else.
Right.
Just in a different
In way. A chuck!
Exactly.
And she actually does that in the second arc.
Yep. Hawksmoor, which is an interesting character that they do nothing with.
Right.
Like, basically, he has the power to do anything he wants in a city. And what does he do? He hides in the floor and then disembowels something. Yes. That's his...
It's actually pretty cool.
That's his back forward heart punch attack.
Right, right.
That's what he does. And then the Midnighter, who is not... Him and Swift are, like, not in the same league as everyone else.
Right.
So that could be a little interesting, except for the fact that he can't be beaten in anything resembling a fair fight. Like, right. He just automatically wins.
Right. So, we've seen this movie called Rocky IV, right? By the time we get up to Rocky IV, we know that Rocky's going to win,
mm-hmm.
right? But he's up against Dolph Lundgren, this right. guy that's a whole head taller than he is. And he's got a beat, and he's got a fight, and Rocky is losing in that big fight. You know, he's getting the crap kicked out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And was it eventually ended in a draw? Is that what it does? Or does he win the... It was an exhibition fight.
By, like, technical.
Okay.
Or something.
But the end is, Rocky gets the crap kicked out of him.
Mm-hmm.
But then he still, we'll say, wins, even if it's on a moral ground or a fan ground or whatever. In The Authority, I never get the sense that Dolph Lundgren has beaten the crap out of Rocky Balboa in any of these arcs. And that, to me, is, I guess, the problem. That's what I'm saying. Here's these cosmic power of being able to do anything. And then... Okay, and I get that from your point, Matthew, where you say, well, that's the point of the Authority. They come in and they squash the little bugs that are causing mm-hmm. the problem, and then they move on. But if you don't have some sense of, oh my gosh, are our heroes going to, is there some kind of
and
major
maybe,
conflict or hurdle that they have to get over,
and you it know, gets think a little about, old. Think about someone like the Doctor in Doctor Who.
Right.
Like the
Yeah, you always know he's going to win.
Sure, you know he's going to win. You know that he's not going to die because he's going to regenerate at least up until one more shot, right?
Right, right.
But you say, is the Doctor going to get there in time? Are people going to die? Is his companion going to die?
Right.
You know, she's probably likely to die, or, you know, in the rare cases, they are likely to die. There's something at stake. But from the very first panel of The Authority, they just murder millions of people. Right. So it's like, are people going to die? Well, who cares? The Authority kills more people than the bad guys.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, again, I have spent the majority of this discussion talking about what The Authority is not. For me, when you break it down, this is Spinal Tap. This is Derek's amplifier turned to 11. This is the point where loud becomes as important as the lyrics that you're saying. And I get what you're saying, but things that were out around the same time that had a similar job. Let's say, did you ever read the original arc, Grant Morrison's JLA?
Yeah, that was the Midsummer's Night's Dream, right?
No, the stuff that came after that, the good parts.
Oh, that's the Babel
Superman,
Tower of
Babel. Batman, blah, 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 blah. And these characters all come together and they're like, right. Ta-da, look at us, we're awesome. This is that only it goes to 11.
Hmm.
Jenny Sparks is the spirit of the 20th century. She's not just some superhero. She's supposed to be more than that. And Apollo and the Midnighter are these super weapons of mass destruction. This is something that is designed to take a lot of that big, dumb, you know, chop sucky summer fun explosion movies, like Independence Day, like anything Will Smith has been in that doesn't have, you know, his son or the word happiness in the title.
Or a beard.
Exactly. Well, did he have a beard in Bagger Vance? Yes. Okay. This is meant to be over the top. This is supposed to be big, bang, womb, thud, whump.
Right.
And as one of the first times I've ever seen this, you know, it still rings true to me. It's still interesting to me, not because it's something that I'm going to sit back and go, I wonder what's going on with the carrier, or how does Shen feel about the relationship between Apollo and Midnighter? Because she's close to the Midnighter. To me, it's kind of a woo. You know, it's that moment where you're out and your friends are all drinking and nobody's really having any fun, and you just kind of go woo to remind yourself what fun is like. This book is the point where you swallow your own saliva and nearly choke yourself, and your left eye is really all watering.
Yeah.
And because your computer just rebooted and you don't have everything set up, you don't actually have your cough switch set up. And these things happen.
Here, take a breath here. Take a drink. Grifter says, the Ellis Hitch Authority era is one of my favorite comic trades of all time. Though I had barely any knowledge of Stormwatch prior to this, it really didn't matter as the story didn't make it hard for new readers. Plunging the reader and cast immediately into extinction event level threats, and their talents were meant to deal with those anyway, or become one themselves. There was a sense of trepidation as the threats were believable, and the heroes we needed were up to the task, whether it's the Midnighter ramming the character and Gamora's you-know-what, Jack Hawksmoor ripping apart an alien warmonger rapist from the parallel Earth, or Ginny Sparks frying God. The Authority had the balls and moxie to stand up to these ruthless mega-villains, erasing the morality line that many times held back the good guys from achieving the needed results. This is not your daddy's superheroes. This is the Authority.
Well, of course Grifter would say that. He got a big check from Image after he left Wildcats.
Actually, Grifter is now a member, oddly enough, the Authority.
Nice. Well, of course he would say that.
Astro Dinosaurus says, this is one of those comics I'm afraid of coming on because I would have a hard time stopping once I get going. It's just good. It's really, really good in a variety of ways. Let's just stick to that. Interestingly enough, though, the series is one that kept being good after its first run, and that's despite the high standards being set by Warren Ellis. Miller, Morrison, not that Morrison, and the other writers who have been on the series always seem to make this series more than what most other comics ever attempted to be. Oh, and beyond God, Poverty, and Tom Cruise, this series has the greatest villains ever. So yeah, with this series, Planetary and Brubaker's Sleeper, it's seriously hard to steer wrong when reading a Wildstorm title, which is nice. And finally, Slappy says, this series is often enjoyed for the fresh direction on tropes we have seen all too often. Unfortunately, one of the things I often found troubling was that some of the storytelling would wander and have pacing that did not properly fit the piece. The art was very enjoyable, and the Batman-Superman analogs were swell. Overall, three servings of cold gravy with a hair in it. From Slappy.
Ooh, a monkey's reference. Very impressive. I think that for me to make my final case for the Authority.
Sure, go ahead, because we're wrapping up now anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Some comic books are a chess game. And some comic books, you're bowling. There are a few comic books out there that are essentially a puzzle box. And the Authority is a flume ride where you're drunk and the girl in front of you flashes the camera and you buy the picture and you hang it up in your dorm room so that all your frat brothers can see the time that you were really drunk and you were on the flume ride and the girl with the great knockers showed her breasts on the camera and you're behind her throwing the horns and going, woo! So, I mean, it's not necessarily, it's certainly not something that you're going to have to spend a lot of time decoding, you know, heavy personal anecdotes. It's not an Eddie Izzard kind of, Sebastian, I'd better go moment. It's kind of, you know, it is the balls out Tau Kappa Epsilon, you know, drinking party where we all fall off the party porch. And that's okay. And I like that for what it is. If we worry about what it's not, we're taking away from the fact that it really is an interesting story. Now, granted, you do make a point that it's the same story three times in some cases, but it's not. You know, it's not a terribly uninteresting story, and it has some good moments. And those moments where the characters stand back and go, I sure am badass. Every once in a while, you're just kind of like, hell yeah, you're badass.
So for you, Matthew, this is a must-buy book?
I would say that it's a recommendation. Not a must-buy, but something that I would recommend that you read. And if you love it, there's more arcs of it. And, you know, it all does maintain, it is all of a piece. If you like this, I think you will like other Authority. And this is, you know, it ain't Watchmen, but it's quality storytelling. It's a good story, and I like it.
Rodrigo, why should people avoid this book?
I think for me, the most frustrating thing about the Authority, and to hit real quick, the art is great.
Oh, yeah, it's really good.
It's really good. This artist is the same guy who was drawing the Ultimates, right?
Yes.
Yep, Brian Hitch.
Really strong, good characterization. You know, you never get the characters confused with each other. Just fantastic work. Excellent when, you know, particularly excellent when a bunch of ships just explode out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, they
ship
make explode, use, they ship make explodes use out of nowhere. Panels.
Awesome. Yeah. Happens like five times, but in that case, it's good every time it happens.
Yeah.
For me, what was actually really frustrating about the Authority is that the Authority is a super duper team composed of what, 5, 6, 7 really interesting characters who then proceed to do totally uninteresting things. It's
the spirit of the 20th century and a man who is in tune with every shaman that has come before him, and he embodies everything that is humanity. A woman who can think and a machine pops out of nowhere. She's like Donatello, except she has boobs. You know, it's like everything. All of these characters are awesome. Apollo is basically Laser Superman, and the Midnighter is Batman on whatever upper the kids are doing nowadays. And yet all the and Hawksmoor is like is the saddest example of this, because all he does is dig underground, come out and punch somebody from behind.
Yeah.
He's like the Johnny Cage of this of this book.
Sweet delay,
and it
Johnny.
Is just to me such a waste. And a lot of the times, and to me it seems like these are all like fantastic character concepts and they're all brought together. And then there's kind of no place to go with it except just dropping a spaceship on someone.
Yeah.
And it, I think that's what annoyed me about it. That's really, it seemed to me that this had so much potential. And in the end, it's just the same thing three times in a row. And it's not even that interesting a thing.
Okay.
Now, if you enjoy the art and you enjoy a good Rock'em Sock'em comic book and you want to see somebody literally punch somebody's brain out of their skull,
yes,
pick up The Authority. If you want to, if you want a book that explores its characters thoroughly and satisfactorily, pass it.
I'm going to go middle of the road on this one, because when I first picked it up and got into the first couple pages, I'm like, oh, good Lord, here's another trope that we've seen in all the other books that have come on before.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I didn't read this when it originally came out. Had no interest in reading it when it originally came out. But if you read it when it originally came out, then it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now we've been overcome by The Boys, and we've been overcome by so many other similar type.
Yeah, I mean, even in the big two that this is kind of, to a certain degree, lampooning, we've seen stories like this.
Right, we've seen this stuff before. So when I got into it, I was like, again with this stuff? But then I realized, oh, this may be the first time that we saw this.
Mm.
So from that aspect, it's very interesting. But for me, the bottom line is the art is great, the stories are kind of mundane, the character development is there, but it really doesn't develop in these 12 issues. This is one you really need to go down to your local library if you're mildly interested in the book and check it out there. Then decide whether you want to buy it. But I'm not going to say go out and buy this book, because I really can't. It's interesting, it's kind of like an appetizer for things to come, mm-hmm. but it's not a main meal, and it's not the best meal you've ever had. That's from my point of view. So, three varying opinions this week on the show. I think it's all good. And we will proceed with more books in the future. And speaking of more books, mm-hmm. next week, or this week, the first issue of The New Legion comes out.
Woo!
And so next week on the show, we're going to have the Super Future Friends, Kristen and Adriana, on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to break down the first issue of The Legion in its new run and see how long that lasts. Thank you so much, everybody, for being a part of the Major Spoilers experience. Be sure to head over to the Major Spoilers website. We'll have more stuff and new stuff coming all the time. The forums will be back when the forums are back. And the Super Future Friends next week. We'll get some girls on the show. Woohoo! Why? Because we know that you like comics, and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit Major Spoilers at majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers and on MySpace at myspace.com/majorspoilers.
Fat Dick's Ray Vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about it. right away. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya what a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Start raving, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2010.